timeless information for your self-care and health. HRNradio.com.
Hi, everyone. This is Lionel Ketchian with Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters. And if you're interested on visiting Dr. Siegel's website, which I recommend highly to you, always has information that is beneficial for living our lives, it's BernieSiegelMD.com. That's Bernie, B-E-R-N-I-E, Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L, MD.com. Bernie, good day to you, and I think it's wonderful that we're together. What's been on your mind lately? A lot, huh?
Don't start me off on my craziness.
Oh, boy.
With an open question.
Well, why you know, not? Why
my
not?
My first reaction is always drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know if I've told you that about once I said that as a joke when people asked me how I dealt with stress. I said,
right.
Well, drugs and alcohol. And then I went to the men's room, and the guy came crashing into the men's room. I thought he was going to mug me. I mean, the look on his face and, you know, his aggression. And he grabbed hold of me. I'm trying to pee. And he said, you're coming with me. And it's like, what the hell? He said, I'm taking you to an AA meeting.
Then
I relaxed, and I apologized to him. I said, I realize what I said is not a joke, you know, for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't say it anymore without explaining I'm kidding, you know.
Right.
But
right.
Boy, he scares the wits out of me.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I was actually talking to a psychologist about another idea that I had on dealing with, you know, past issues with people, you know, and let's say somebody says something that disturbs you, and that's your responsibility, somewhat. And there was the idea that you could actually, and this may sound very strange, but you could lie to yourself about what that person said to you so that you could change it around so it's not offensive and it doesn't leave you upset and, you know, constantly thinking about the way you feel in regards to the, you know, the other person's statement about you or towards you or whatever the case might be. You've had a lot of different things that you've described in that fashion as well. So I get an email from you, and it says, there's a number of things. It says it was number 349 in your book.
Yeah, my book. Right.
Yes. But then it says, when you have love, you don't need amnesia. But here's what you registered for me. You talk about amnesia, but I want to bring up amnesia up because amnesia is actually a good thing when it comes to our psychological dilemmas regarding, you know, what people say, how we feel about it. We get all, you know, caught up in the web of, something that probably really doesn't matter, but somehow we're left feeling badly, and that could affect us greatly. You know, we could turn around and we lose our love for someone, or who knows what the case might be. But, you know, I had a speaker on Happy You that his name was Robert Gene Smith, and you know, he's an NLP expert and a tapping expert, but he brought up the fact that we're lying to ourselves in a lot of things. We don't remember exactly what people say or incidents precisely how they happen, but he said we can go back and change what somebody said to us only for the benefit of not feeling bad. I tried it. It worked like magic. So there's something about this amnesia statement that you've come up with that actually has a psychological role and could play a big part in freeing people up from past traumas.
It's even, as you talk about it, I never thought of it, it's like hypnotizing yourself.
It is. It is. And that's why I'm really glad we're talking about this, because you've brought up hypnotizing ourselves, which is exactly right. We're hypnotizing ourselves negatively.
Yes. Yeah, that's why I often say to people, draw me a picture of whatever, you know, their
mm-hmm.
issue is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you see this horrible drawing, you know what's going on in their mind. That's
right.
What they believe. And they can reprogram themselves
yeah.
By imaging everything being as they want it to. Because I'm always saying, you know, and I've said it to you, when people are going to have surgery, picture it going beautifully.
Bernie,
I mean, this is interesting. Let me.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. I would say to people, you will wake up comfortable, thirsty, and hungry. Because a lot of times all the drugs would make people feel nauseated.
Yeah.
And my patients would wake up, and they were comfortable, thirsty, and hungry. They didn't need pain medication. They were looking for something to eat in the recovery room. And the nurses were like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
But then one day, patient walked in to the office in follow-up and said, you're a problem. You caused me trouble. I said, what did I do? Your nurse told me you say you'll wake up hungry, and I've gained weight since you operated on me. I can't stop eating, so I stopped. I said, you'll wake up hungry, but you won't finish everything on your plate. And then people didn't keep gaining weight after surgery.
Right, right. You know, talking to you about this is so perfect. I had a chill go up my spine because this has been a dilemma for me because I don't like the word lie. You know, to think about even lying to myself, even if nobody knows about it, you know, kind of disturbs me because I do like to tell the truth. And lying to myself just doesn't, you know, resonate with me totally. So I've been trying to find another word or other words that would better describe that. And you just said the word that I discovered just the other day. Oh, we do. All right. Good. Could we put him in now, or give us a moment just to finish this thought, and we can put him on? Is that good?
Okay.
Okay. All right. So instead of the word lie, I came up with the word imagine because they were talking about John Lennon, and you just talked about imagination and imagining. So it fits perfectly with what we're talking about here.
Right. What you visualize, your body believes.
Exactly.
And it becomes your reality.
Exactly. So let's continue this. I'm thrilled. And, you know, and you haven't changed what you've always said. It's just that I'm still catching up with you after all these years. It takes a long time to really understand, you know, some of the very precise, simple things that you've been sharing with us.
As a physician, you know? I mean, I learned a lot from experience. I didn't deny the things I saw.
Right.
And, you know, try to spread the word around. All the power that the mind had and the words of the physician had to that patient and what they did.
Right.
You know, it's living or dying even based on what they heard.
So interesting to me. So interesting. You know, just because you say things doesn't mean we always receive them the way we can use them in our life. So, like I say, it took me a long time to comprehend this and use it in a way that works for me. So,
but
thank you.
If it comes from an authority figure, then it's more likely to have an impact on you.
So true.
You think they know what they're talking about.
That's funny. But it's true. It's very, very true. Yeah, and again, hypnosis is involved there. You know, you believe it, that's it.
Well, we're all in France all the time.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we have a caller and a guest. So welcome. You're on with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Hi there.
Hi. Bernie?
Yes?
My name is Lori. And what I wanted to ask is, when somebody is in the hospital in serious or critical condition, people often say that person is fighting for their life. But I was thinking if I were in critical condition in the hospital, I would want to take it easy while I heal and get well.
Right.
So I can't really make sense out of that expression, fighting for your life.
I say this to so many people. You know, they're fighting a war against cancer. They're in a battle. And their power and energy is going the wrong way.
Mm.
What they should be trying to do is heal their life and their body. The two go together. But when you're fighting the enemy, you empower the enemy.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think that is... Let me say with one exception. A lot of times kids, because of all the stuff they're doing with computers and, you know, games they play where there are battles and wars and things. So, you know, if you're 5 or 6 or 8 years old, it may work fine for you. Like one boy had airplanes flying around in his brain and blasting the tumor, and it went away.
So that was,
parents and the doctor thought he was nuts because he said, I can't find it anymore. And when what happened was, interestingly, he fell down at school because he was fine at home, so they didn't keep him home anymore. They sent him back to school. He fell in the gymnasium, hit his head, and then everybody panicked, so they did another scan, and there was no tumor. So what the kid was telling them was true. But for most adults, if you put them into a battle, you know, killing something, attacking, it doesn't work. We had one patient who was, what do you call it, when you won't go to in the Army, a conscientious objector. And so he went to his doctor, and the doctor said, "Dave, I'm going to kill your cancer with this treatment." And Dave got up and said, "I don't kill anything," and he walked out of his office.
Wow.
Now, when you look at his drawings, because I had him do a drawing, he has his white cells carrying the cancer cells away. You know, it's like they're nasty, they're a problem, we have to take them away and clean up. And so, again, he wasn't killing, attacking, and he went on for, I don't know how many years, but he did beautifully with his own image of healing himself and not fighting wars or battling, but eliminating the troublesome, you know, cancer cells from his life without hurting them. And for each person, you have to devise your own image, what works for you. And that's why, again, whether it's in a dream or you do a drawing, look at it. Because if you see negative things in it that make you uncomfortable, then you correct them in the next image. And I always say, your body believes what you picture. Mm-hmm. You know, when you picture mm-hmm. yourself receiving treatment, doing well, having complications, side effects, your body thinks it's really going on, mm-hmm. and so you have that reaction. But once you picture yourself going to the doctor, getting treated, feeling wonderful, going home, your body says, okay, and expects that. Because we know from studies that when people are driving to the doctor, their white blood counts are already going down, and they haven't even received treatment. And then there are others who see it, you know, as a hope and a cure, and yeah, they don't have a problem with their white count because they don't see it as being poison. Yeah, one lady drew the devil giving her poison as her treatment. I mean, what sense does that make, you know, to picture that? And others see the operating room as a mm-hmm. deserted place with no love and nobody caring for you. And others draw it full of flowers and symbols of love. And don't have any trouble. And even windows where God's light can shine in. I mean, and those are the people who do beautiful. So, again, I'd say, yes, eliminate the killing aspect. Because we're really not born to be killers. You know, a lot of it started out also with things like the Pac-Man eating up, you know, being your white blood cell and eating up the cancer cell. The way I put it is this. I always have a lot of pets. If I have something in my body that I don't like, I don't mind having my dogs run around and eat it up. They could be my immune system. Because to me, I don't see that as anything violent. They're having a meal, and they could eat up my tumor, and I'm fine, and they feel good to have something to eat. But it's not, you know, me with guns and knives and stabbing and attacking and killing. It's my pets helping me to survive. So the image becomes very important.
So I really appreciate your phone call regarding this idea that you brought up. I think that was a very good thought that you shared with Bernie.
Laurie, excellent. Is this something personal or is somebody in your family going through something?
It's not anybody going through anything yet. But I was just thinking, what if I was in a situation where I was critical later?
Good statement. What if? Yeah, you can prepare yourself, you know, rehearse and practice being the person you want to be. William Saroyan said a wonderful line in one of his books. He said, everybody alive is an actor, but almost everybody alive is a very pathetic actor. And that's why we're given a lifetime to rehearse and practice. So I'd say, yes, what you're doing is right. Rehearse and practice so that if anything does come up, you're ready for it.
And I can stay well as much as possible.
Good.
Yeah, and this whole idea of, you know, battling or fighting a war with illness, like anything that we resist, you know, they say what we resist persists. So resistance only probably either creates more of what we don't like or certainly doesn't eliminate what we want. Bernie has always said that instead of that, it's redirection. So when we redirect, we you know, he says redirect our lives. And that's why I think Bernie's 100% right about redirection. When we redirect, we can use imaging. We look at what it is that we can change or that we're, you know, at odds with. And instead of resisting it, we dig it up and say, okay, if this is it, we can let it go or do something to change ourselves. So I think you bring up a very important aspect of not only fighting illness, but dealing with life in general. Because if we're going to keep going to war over everything, we're going to be exhausted.
and be kind to yourself, because I was thinking when I mentioned all our pets, if I'm training one of the dogs, I don't get mad at them the first time they come in the house, you know, if they do something. But I can let them know what is not proper in the house and take the time. And the same is true with actors, that you rehearse and practice so you get it right. And may I add that your blood chemistry is changed when you act, meaning that if I put somebody in a comedy and draw their blood, I mean, they could be having a tragic life, but they're reading a script from a comedy. Their immune function goes up and stress hormone levels go down. And if I have somebody who's very happy that they got a part in a play and, oh, this is wonderful, but what they're playing is a murderer, they are more likely to get the flu or some other sickness while they're in that play than the person who's in a comedy.
Mm-hmm. Bernie, I would propose that the same effect would be true, not only in acting, but even if you sat in a chair and you imagined things, that would also affect everything.
Right, absolutely.
That's how powerful our imagination is.
Well, it's just, you know, I would say life is an actor. You know, I mean, act is a play. We're all performers. So it's all day and all night long that you are affecting yourself and your health and everything else. And it's not a matter of blaming. Oh, I keep thinking back to dear old Jesus. He said, it is done unto you as you believe. See?
Right.
And I always say, how come nobody got mad at him?
Exactly.
Now, why didn't they all say, stop blaming us, it's not our fault? But it is. It's about your beliefs. Mm. Because that's what is going on in your body chemistry. That's the part you're playing. I don't know how else to say
it. Yes, well put.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so your body thinks, okay, that's what's going on. And it's amazing.
Thank you.
Well, let me
ask you my question.
I never stop talking once I get a question. there are people who the doctors thought they were treating but were not due to medical errors. No radiation material in the machine, no chemotherapy in, you know, in the intravenous, where mistakes were made. They didn't know they weren't treating people because the people acted as if they were being treated. So these were doctors who, weeks or even a month in one case later, realized when they were checking the machine, or checking on what the nurses were doing, they realized, we haven't treated anybody for a month. And he felt terrible. But I said to him, it's not your fault. I said, they all acted as if they were being treated. That's why. And he looked like he was going to faint. And then, you know, because when I made it clear to him, and then I've had some of my patients make them think the machines are broken because they had no side effect. And then, as one doctor said, when he saw my name in the chart, he realized, oh, it's one of his crazy patients. So, you know, her answer was, I get out of the way, I let it go to my tumor. So she had no side effects of her cancer. And a lot of doctors who thought I was nuts, to quote one of them, said, I know you and your crazy patients don't give her hope. That was a lady. He agreed with her other doctor that she would be dead in a couple of weeks. And within 2 months, she was in complete remission. because he went along and gave her hope.
Okay, well, we're coming up on a break. Thank you very much for your call today, and I hope your day is wonderful.
And thank you. I'll hang up and listen to the rest.
Okay, great, great. Thanks, and we'll be right back.
Like what you hear? Tell your friends. Thanks for listening to HRNradio.com.
Okay, hello everyone. Welcome back to Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, and I'm Lionel Ketchian, and we're having a lively discussion on imagination and how it affects our health, our well-being, our life. And Bernie and I were just talking about the fact that he always talks about the idea that our upbringing, our parents, our childhood affects the rest of our life, affects our happiness, and we learn so much from our parents. If we have parents that are a little more aware about these things. And I was just mentioning that if you're grown up in a negative environment, then your imagination is rather negative, so that it's only sort of the right assumption to say that people grow up being negative and almost can't help themselves because they've been trained and they've caught the
they've
been hypnotized. Exactly. So you're right about parents. They start us off on one path or another.
Yeah, one of the things I realize is your parents are called your parents. Their parents are called grandparents. And I thought, you know, why did they become grand? Because through experience, they have learned what they did to their kids wasn't always the right thing. So they treat their grandchildren in a much healthier way.
Right.
And they become grand because they become therapeutic, not destructive. Mm. I mean, one lady, these are her exact words. She said, "My mother's words are eating away at me and maybe gave me cancer. She told me I was a failure, I embarrassed her, and she dressed me in dark clothes so nobody would notice." And fortunately, that lady, when she developed cancer, got in touch with me, read my books, and she said, "You gave me permission," which I told her she shouldn't have needed. You don't need permission to be your true self. She said, "To become my authentic self."
Mm-hmm.
And then she went out and bought bright clothing, and it's hysterical. I mean, I'm saying that because when I met her, looking at the color of the clothes she had on, I was getting a headache. Mm-hmm. Just how iridescent everything was. And wondering how her husband let her out of the house looking like that, you know. But once she told me her story, I thought, that's wonderful, you know, that you could go out and buy clothes like that now and let everybody see you and know you. So I always introduce her to people when we're out in public so they understand why she's dressed and, you know, mm-hmm. red from head to toe. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So, you know, this idea of hypnotizing ourselves, or we're hypnotized. Where did you develop that understanding?
Who knows? Just all my reading.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. There is a society, the Medical Dental Hypnotherapy Association.
Mm-hmm.
I am terrible with names. That's my one big problem. But by reading some of the books, the gentleman, the hypnotherapist, who organized it and began to teach it, and the organization helps train the members, you know, so you're
right.
always learning techniques, and, you know, I've sent them a lot of stories, and they're always thanking me because of what I saw happening in the operating room and with patients in my office, you know, how my words became so important to them. And I can only say, in a practical sense, that's what affected me. That I was working with doing a lot of children's surgery, and the children don't interpret what I say in the way an adult would.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you say you go to sleep in the operating room, people are thinking of, you know, of anesthesia. But kids are hearing, oh, I'll go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And they were falling asleep being wheeled into the operating room. And
yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Every time I tell this story, there's one boy with appendicitis. When I told him you'll go to sleep in the operating room, he turned over on his stomach and fell asleep. When we got to the operating room, I picked him up off the stretcher we wheeled him in on, and carried him over to the operating table and put him on his back. And he woke up and started screaming. I said, what are you yelling about? What's wrong? He said, you told me I was going to sleep, and I sleep on my stomach.
Uh-huh.
And so I had to spend 5 or 10 minutes bargaining with him about where your appendix is, and I can't get at it from the back. And after a while, he said, all right, I'll sleep on my back. But that's how real it was and how therapeutic it was. And so the operating room staff used to bust out laughing. I'd come in with a patient, and they'd fall asleep. And everybody would laugh because they knew I had said that in the emergency.
Mm-hmm.
To induce that kind of.
Yeah. Well, you know, as much as hypnosis is a factor in our lives, I think the real issue is developing ways, I would say to wake ourselves up, but what I mean by that is to realize that we're under hypnosis, that we're not really dealing with something rational. We're dealing with something that we've put there. You know, maybe a belief system or something else, or maybe just something we've thought about, and then all of a sudden, consciously or otherwise, it's affecting us and, managing our lives. We're not in charge.
No, that's a true story. When I started this work with cancer patients, a group of oncologists who I had worked with before called me to come to their office. So I'm all smiles thinking, oh, this is so nice. They're going to tell me what a wonderful person I am helping them. I go up to their office. You see, I'm predicting. You know what I mean? I'm anticipating all this, wonderful reaction.
Good stuff.
And I sit down around the table with them, and they start yelling at me. What the hell are you doing? You're not a psychiatrist. You can make people feel worse. They may die sooner. They may do worse. And I'm sitting there, and after a few minutes, I started smiling because I thought, you're such a jerk. You know, it's like you expect everybody to tell you you're wonderful. See? But it's, again, like my wife and my mother trained me, see, to think that. And
I see.
And after a while, they all said to me, what are you smiling about? Because it made no sense to them.
Right.
And I said, I expected you to tell me what a wonderful person I am, and you're all yelling at me. So they busted out laughing, too. And they became my close friends and associates.
Beautiful.
The one I just mentioned. I mean, he handed me a note, from his office saying, I agree with her doctor. She probably has, a few weeks left to live. But I know you and your crazy patient, so I'll give her hope. Mm. That's an exact sentence from his letter, note to me in the office. And you think of what a change that is from him yelling at me years before, what the hell am I doing? I'm going to hurt people. And she went, as I said, within 2 months, I got a note from him again, the office record, saying she's in complete remission, no sign of cancer. North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
I told her to go and upset her doc by me.
Yeah. Well, if we... install a belief system that tells us if we do this or that, we're not going to be healthy, then we've hypnotized ourselves, and we'll believe exactly that installation that we've just, put there.
You got to believe. I don't remember who said that, but you got to believe. And it doesn't matter what it's in, health, form, business.
Yeah.
You've got to believe if you're going to be successful.
When we come back, Bernie, I want to propose another thought to you, but I'll let that wait until we the next commercial break, and we'll come back, and I want to share a thought with you and see what you think about what I'm proposing here in my thinking. So with that, stay tuned, and we will be right back.
All positive natural health programs on HRNradio.com.
We are
just
back.
Another thought.
Yes.
I look back. How frequently we say, all right. I didn't realize how often, when you're having a conversation with somebody or in the family, I'd say, all right. And one of our grandchildren who has developmental problems, genetic issues. So he's so open and honest and truthful. You know what I mean?
Because mm-hmm.
he doesn't have the problems people have.
Right, right.
He just do what he wants,
sure.
he wants to do.
No restriction.
But he started yelling, all right, really out loud. Every time he'd hear me say, all right, I'd hear, all right. And he was like my therapist. I realized how often I said it. You know, and I think so many times we're saying it that really isn't all right. It's the next thing I got to do, all right,
uh-huh.
you know.
Uh-huh.
But the acceptance, if you can really accept it and not
wow.
make it a struggle,
wow.
that it's okay, I'll get through it,
mm-hmm.
but to really enjoy that day and, you know, have an all right, you know, feeling about what you're doing. Well, one of the things, one of my questions always is, you have 15 minutes to live, what will you do? And almost everybody gets on the phone to say, I love you. My feeling is, what the hell do I want to spend my last 15 minutes on a telephone for? So, you know, that wasn't my feeling. And one day, one of our kids was, you know, sitting in a room where I was doing a workshop with people. And I said to them, you have 15 minutes to live. What are you going to do? And we heard from him. I don't know, he might have been 8 or 10 years old at the time. I buy a quart of chocolate ice cream and eat it. And then everybody in the room busts out laughing. And I said, there is the right answer. See, coming from a child.
For him.
Yeah. You got a few minutes left to live. You don't have to call your parents and say, I love you. You could say that, you know, every time you see them. You don't need an extra call. But get your chocolate ice cream. But
yeah.
then, to me, the key was, what's your chocolate ice cream?
Mm.
You know what I mean? It doesn't have to really be a quart of ice cream. It
right.
could be who you want to be with, where you want to be, what job you want, where do you want to live. I mean, go live your chocolate ice cream.
Exactly.
Do what you love.
Mm-hmm.
Another way, let your heart make up your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all those wonderful sayings. Because that's when I see the positive health result. When people really start living, well, one lady put on her refrigerator, when you live in your heart, magic happens.
It's true.
It's not magic. You know, I was mentioning to you Carl Jung talking about synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people will call it coincidences. Oh, look, I met you today. I really wanted to talk
right.
to you today.
Right.
It's not a coincidence. It's something that you have paused. See, not by calling the person saying, what's your schedule, where are you going? Yeah, we can cause things to happen, too. But this is a cause. They're the coincidence. That it's your consciousness that gets you to a certain place at a certain time,
mm-hmm.
meeting somebody. It's just amazing. I mean, my whole life, I would say, has been that kind of thing, because the worst grade I got in 4 years of college was in creative writing. So when somebody said to me, why don't you write a book and save yourself traveling and having to give all these talks? I said, because I don't know how to write. I'll never write a book. And that person started getting people together to help me write a book, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And it all happened. Now I know how to write, because I may say the first book was spoken, not written, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
I just sat in front of a recorder and talked as if I was talking to the world. And
it's still you, so
yeah,
it doesn't really matter.
Type it up.
Yeah.
But now I can do it, you know, and make words and print them. While I'm thinking them and not block everything out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can let my feelings flow in a way that I couldn't when I was a college student. I was thinking too much.
Mm.
And this is something, again, back to what Mario Puzo, you know, Godfather, he was a friend. And when he went to write, he didn't sit down and start writing a novel. He sat down, he said, and waited to hear the characters talk and tell him what to write. So he's back in a trance, too. He becomes all the people in the book, and he's writing what they have to say, not himself. See? So he's not thinking what's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's why his work was so appreciated and, you know, did so well, because you felt all those people in, you know, the movie and the book and whatever.
Yeah. Now, you sort of lead me to what I was alluding to before the break, and that is, Imagine if all of us in the world were more accepting, less connected to our belief systems, and more free. We're able to manage our lives much better, so that we're not in turmoil and negativity and that sort of thing. Imagine all that, and my question is, what kind of world would we be creating when we find out that our true purpose here is to enjoy ourselves, to become creators? You know, what kind of world will that possibly be, and can it ever happen?
Yeah, I just thought of something, too, which I find sometimes I can get in conflict over, that when you try to help people and they take advantage of you, what do you do then?
Good question.
I have to say, I think there is appropriate anger. I'm not talking about the violence, you know, that we see on the streets today.
Sure.
That's not appropriate.
Right.
That's sick people hurting others. Mm-hmm. But when you're not respected, when people lie to you, take advantage of you, then I think it is appropriate to speak up.
Mm-hmm.
And to let them know that, hey, I'm something. I want to be respected.
Right.
And I've learned that when people apologize, oh, this is something happening in the last few days. We have a new mailman or mail woman, and there were 2 days in a row we never got our mail.
Oh.
7, 8 o'clock at night, I go down looking, and there's nothing there. And you get it the next day. And I left a note saying, what's going on? You know, what's happening?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, they're new. They don't know the routes, and they're having troubles. But at the end, she wrote, sorry. So I left her a note saying, I can respect anybody who says sorry. Because you're not making excuses. You're apologizing. And that's the part that I really feel. That if she just said, oh, the truck didn't work, or I'm having, you know, I don't know the area, or I'm this or that, or the, you know, it's not never her, then I would say we're going to have a problem. But if she can say sorry, it says she does care. She realizes there are problems. She's working at them, trying to get them right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that would contribute to a better world if we learn that and become more responsible. For example, but what if people were more responsible and did the right thing? What kind of world would we be creating?
Well, a very happy world, because you knew you'd have resources. You know, I'm just looking at one of your newsletters, CPR.
Yep.
Cardiopulmonary
resuscitation. Yep. No, not the way I put it.
Continuous positive reinforcement.
Yep.
And I was even thinking the title of our cancer group was ECAP, Exceptional Cancer Patient.
Mm-hmm.
Because my wife said to me one day, if you're going to name it, they're exceptional people. I'm having trouble coming up with a name.
Right.
So it became exceptional. But then I thought it could be exceptional, caring, affectionate people.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. They are. They're caring people. That's part of why they survive. A lot better than everybody else.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's true. So,
we should learn from them. That's something I keep telling people. Learn from those who do well. You know, if you're running a business, you don't go to the people who fail. And if you're dealing with an illness, don't go to the people who are, you know, having more complications, dying faster than their doctors expect. That isn't help. Find
right.
the people who don't die when they're supposed to. And ask them what happened, and they'll tell you a story.
Mm.
And then pay attention to what they tell you.
All right. All right, well, stay tuned. We're going to be right back with more with Dr. Bernie Siegel.
Inspiration and motivation is just a podcast away at hrnradio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, and I'm Lionel Ketchian. And Bernie, let's close our last segment talking about what you and I feel are very important for all of us, including our own lives, and that's love, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm always mentioning my book, 365 Prescriptions for the Soul. Please, everybody, go read it.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm reading it year after year.
Yep.
And because I can't remember 365 things I've written. But this one, the other day, was amnesia. They walls are thick where love is thin, an English proverb. But, see, I fell, hit my head, and developed amnesia. And when my, well, she was my wife, but I didn't know it because I had hit my head on the pavement, falling off the roof. So the way I wrote in this article is this attractive woman is shaking me, asking, "Are you all right, honey?" I said, "What are you calling me honey for?"
Wow.
She said, "I'm your wife." I'm laughing because I wrote, "It improved my marriage and my relationship with our children," because I couldn't remember, you know, all the things that happened in the past that I was carrying around with me. So everybody got along great. But and then my memory returned.
Oh.
I needed counseling.
Oh.
Then I remembered everything. And the counselor said, "I'm going to save you time and money. Instead of coming for therapy, read this and do what it says." And she handed me a piece of paper. And I read it. And it was Corinthians 1:13. "Love is long-suffering. Love is kind. It is not jealous. Love does not boast. It is not inflated. It is not courteous. It is not selfish. It is not irritable. It does not enumerate the evil. It does not rejoice over the wrong, but rejoices in the truth. It covers all things. It has faith in all things. It hopes in all things. It endures in all things. And love is blind to faults." And I wrote at the end, so that in that way it's as good as amnesia, but it has many more advantages. Helped me in my life. And I think that's the part, you know, if we could love enough, I keep repeating this, but it's ultimately the answer to everything, crazy as that may sound. And I know when people become lovers, how others who have been mistreating them and doing things to them stop doing it because they realize this person is a lover. And then it just is too powerful for them to be negative towards them, to hurt them and wound them. You know, like the mailman who says, "I'm sorry." I mean, they're not screaming back at you for what you're doing and acting the way you're acting.
Right.
They're just loving. Mm-hmm. And everybody absorbs it and enjoys it. So I know so many families where when the person didn't love one day, the family said, "What's wrong? What's going on? What is the?" And, you know, "Well, I'm so busy, I forgot." Oh, you know, and then they're all hugging and crying.
Right.
Because they thought, "Oh, she doesn't love us anymore. You know, she didn't say that nice thing anymore." And, so, you want to drive people crazy? Love them, what I can say. And if you can't love, then develop amnesia for a while. And if you forget the past, it's so nice.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't resent anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
That. Every time you meet somebody the next 24 hours, think about, this is the first time I've ever met them.
Hmm.
And then interact.
I like that. A fresh outlook.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why, you know, in the newsletter, my last happiness newsletter, I had Emmett Fox's quote, "If you could only learn to love, you could be the most powerful, human on the planet."
Oh, yeah, I used to have that posted on the wall in my bedroom.
Yeah.
Let me read it.
Oh, please.
"No difficulty that enough love will not conquer. No disease that enough love will not heal. No door that enough love will not open. No gulf that enough love will not bridge. No wall that enough love will not throw down. No sin that enough love will not redeem. It makes no difference how deeply seated may be the trouble, how hopeless the outlook, how muddled the tangle, how great the mistake. A sufficient realization of love will dissolve it all. If only you could love enough, you would be the happiest and most powerful being in the world."
Yeah. That's powerful.
And that is so true. You know, when you look at the people of the world, from a Gandhi, you know, to others who have been thrown into concentration camps. And, but when they didn't hate their enemies. Yeah, because I've read many articles I'm reading about Gandhi, about how the British really didn't know what to do with the guy. you know, I mean, there were times he would be offering them himself and his help to do things, you know, to make India a better place. And that's after they're persecuting him, you know, and dealing with anger. And it's like, how come he's being nice to us? You know, it's, what's wrong with him? But it's the most powerful weapon.
It
is.
But
it says, if only you could love enough to be the happiest, most powerful being in the world. And I see this when I go out in the street. I mean, I'm not saying I'm perfect, and I do it every minute. But when you go out to love the world, it just feels good. I miss people. I just, whether I'm going into a supermarket or an assisted living facility, I interact with the people because I know they've got trouble. Yeah, when I buy a lottery ticket, this one young lady who sells the tickets, you know, at the cash register, I said, well, what can I do for you? Buy me a new, what would it be, Lexus.
Yes.
If I win. But, you know, we have fun and we get to know each other, you know.
Yep.
I would do something for her if I ever.
Right, right. Do you think, you know, we could love more if we dealt with our sort of dealings, you know, regarding ourselves and our feeling hurt, let's say, or issues of feeling hurt. If we were less able to get hurt, don't you think we would turn up our love more?
Yeah, if you stop needing love from people, you know, just let them be who they are. They don't love you, okay, fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so neediness gets in the way.
But if you grew up again with parents, you know, God is redirecting you, something good will come of this.
Perfect.
It's a wonderful way to go through life.
Perfect.
So it won't feel good on some days. You know, but if you believe it, your life changes.